We'll have you turn to the 25th chapter of Matthew, and we'll start there. It's rather interesting here that in the Matthew's Evangel, he starts out, and it isn't right away that he talks about the people being the bride and himself being the bridegroom. But as he nears the end of his journey, we notice here that in verse 14 of chapter 25, he talks about a kingdom. He talks about the kingdom of heaven. It's as a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. Now you know that Matthew was a Levite, and he called the coming kingdom the kingdom of heaven. And that's a euphemism, actually, for the kingdom of Yahweh. But being a Levite, he knew the Jewish mindset, and you don't use Yahweh's name when you're talking to an Orthodox Jew. And that is why he calls it the kingdom of heaven. But Mark, Luke, and John refer, in fact, Luke especially refers to the kingdom of God. Anyway, people think they're two separate kingdoms. They're not. They're the same thing. Except that Matthew, out of deference to his fellow priest, uses the term kingdom of heaven. It really should be heavens, plural. Anyway, let's move on. Notice this man is going, traveling to a far country. And I think you'll know by now that he is actually talking about himself being taken to the heavens, where he now is our high priest as under the Melchizedek priesthood. And he is not present with us like he was in the days of the early apostles. But notice in verse 15, he says, to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to every man according to his several ability. And straight away he took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded the same and made them other 5 talents. Likewise, he that had received 2, he also gained 2 more. But he that had received 1 went and digged in the earth and hid his master's money. After a long time, the sovereign of those servants, the master of those servants, comes and reckoned with them. And so he that had received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Master, you delivered unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. His sovereign said unto him, well done, you good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of the master. And then he that had received 2 talents came and said, Master, you delivered unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them. And his master said unto him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter you into the joy of the master. He which had received the 1 talent came and said, Master, I know you are a hard man. You expect a lot. And you reap where you have not sown, and gathered where you have not strawed. What he's really saying, the evangel has been preached not to everybody, but only to a limited few. And yet, when Yahshua comes, he's going to reap only those that have listened to the evangel, have followed it, and are worthy of being in the kingdom. So he's reaping where there's been no sowing. But that is our job. That's where we come in. That's our job, to do the sowing. And we read here in verse 25, I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the earth. And lo, here, I'll give it back to you now. You can have it. He hadn't done anything. Well, his sovereign answered and said unto him, you wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I sowed not, gather where I have not strawed or sown. You ought to have put my money into the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him and give it to him that has 10 talents. For unto every one that has shall be given, and he shall have abundance. And we read there, but from him that has not shall be taken away even that which he has. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness, there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Here Yahshua tells us he's going to give us talents. And especially to those that are newly baptized, you know that you are given a special gift that's to be used to edify, to build up, strengthen, enlarge the assembly. That's what you're supposed to be doing. That's what the talents are for. Because Yahshua is the one that has picked out special people that he knows. Once they get hold of this truth, they won't let go. They'll hang in there. You know, Israelites are often known as a stiff-necked people. And they are in the sense that when they make their mind up, they want some false doctrine and they follow it, they're just not going to give it up. Also, when they find the truth and latch onto it, they're just as steadfast on that as well. And today we find that the world hardly knows what Yahweh's truth is. It's only given to a few. But that's what Yahweh wants. He's not trying to save the whole world now. That'll come later. That'll come in the second resurrection and perhaps even after that. But I want now to have you turn to the 19th chapter of Revelation. In the parable in the 25th chapter here, Yahshua talks about a ruler who has servants. Now when we move into the end of the evangel, you find that Yahshua now talks about a bride, and he talks about himself as being the bridegroom. In the 19th chapter here of the book of Revelation, notice it says that in verse 7, let us be glad and rejoice and give honor to him. That is, give honor to Yahshua, to Yahweh, because the marriage of the Lamb has come and his wife has made herself ready. Now that is rather interesting. He says his wife has made herself ready. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. Are you going to make yourself ready for the return of Yahshua the Messiah? Are you going to be prepared when he comes? He said, occupy till I come. Keep doing what you're doing. Don't give up. With all of the turmoil going on in this world, it's going to be more and more difficult all the time. Everything will be a horror story probably, and things like this. But we have to keep our focus on Yahshua and what he wants us to do. Many of these things are taking place to wake people up. Wake up call. But notice here in this verse 7, it says his wife has made herself ready. When we have a married couple here, the wife usually takes the husband's name. Isn't that right? Do you think that here that it is the people that have taken on Yahshua's name that will be his wife? Rather interesting, isn't it? That here we have an analogy. His wife has made herself ready. And then we read in verse 8 what his wife did. Or is doing, I should say. To her was granted that she should be arrayed in fine linen, clean and white. For fine linen is the righteousness of saints. Notice in verse 9 it says, and he says unto me, write, blessed are they which are called to the marriage supper of the Lamb. Now we didn't read it, but in the 25th chapter it also talks about the 10 virgins, 5 wise, 5 foolish. They are not the bride, are they? Here we find it says that it is a great thing to be called in to the marriage supper of the Lamb, even though they are not the bride. Well, that's another study. Who are the bridesmaids? What are they doing? And so on. But you'll notice it says, his wife has made herself ready. I want you to go over to the 21st chapter of Revelation. Excuse me. And chapter 21, and notice here in verse 9. It says in verse 9 of the 21st chapter of Revelation, and there came unto me, John says, one of the seven angels which had seven vials full of the seven last plagues, and talked with me, saying, Come hither, and I will show you the bride, the Lamb's wife. And he carried me away in the Spirit to a great and high mountain, and showed me the great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from Elohim, having the glory of Elohim. And her light was like unto stone most precious, even like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. And he goes on to talk about the 12 gates. And notice those 12 gates are 12 angels, and the names written on are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. So here, Yahshua is really getting back into the Old Testament more and more, talking about these things that the Old Testament talks about, which we'll get to in a minute. And it talks about a city. It talks about people that are called and actually become the city of Zion. Well, let's go back to 1 Thessalonians chapter 3. I want to get into this a little bit, because here we sometimes wonder exactly what are we supposed to be doing. Well, 1 Thessalonians is, we'll hit a couple of them here just to get a feel of what we understand Paul was saying when he wrote. Same thing, same idea, same gospel, same hope. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, notice it says in verse 13, the last verse in the chapter, To the end he may establish your hearts unblameable in holiness before Elohim, even our Father, at the coming of our sovereign, Yahshua Messiah, with his saints. So we are to be set aside. We are to be unblameable. We are to be doing all these things. Let's go to chapter 5 of the letter there to the Thessalonians. And notice in chapter 5 and verse 23, Paul mentions the self-same thing again. Verse 23, And the very mighty one of peace sanctify you wholly, and I pray your whole spirit and soul and body be preserved blameless unto the coming of our Master Yahshua. So all through this thing, Paul brings to mind that we're supposed to be ready, always prepared, like the Boy Scouts, ready at all times. Let's go over to, I want to go to 2 Peter, showing that not only Paul, but also Peter wrote that, 2 Peter chapter 3. Peter was one that was... At first, he was always talking before his brain got in gear. When Yahshua was around, he'd say things, and after a while, he'd have to sit and eat his words sometimes. But here, we find that Peter is one of those that really lays it out for us. I want to make sure we understand what he's saying here. 2 Peter chapter 3, notice in verse 14, Peter says, Wherefore, beloved, seeing that you look for such things, be diligent, that you may be found of him in peace, without spot and blameless. So again, he's talking here in verse 15. He talks about the long-suffering of Yahshua, his salvation. So Peter talks about being blameless, always striving to be blameless. Sometimes you wonder, if you have an option to do things, can you do it one way and save a lot of time, or do it another way, do it right, but it'll take you a little more time. Should we take the shortcut, or shouldn't we? Well, I think most of the time you find out you're better off to do it right the first time, and you'll be more satisfied yourself. But I want you to notice verse 15. I don't know if I didn't hear this during this feast, so I want to make sure we understood what Peter is saying here. Notice in verse 15, he's talking about Paul. Notice in this he says, And account the long-suffering of our Yahshua, our Master, as salvation, even as our beloved brother Paul, also according to the wisdom given unto him, has written unto you, and also in his epistles, speaking in them, in these things, in which are some things hard to be understood, which they that are unlearned and unstable rest, as they do also the other scriptures, unto their own destruction. When someone tells you that the law is done away, who do they refer to? What what evangel, what writing, what book? Galatians and Romans, right. Who wrote those? And this is what Peter is saying. If somebody comes to you with a book and they have a bunch of verses that they pick up and they say, you don't have to do the law anymore. Right here, I'll prove it to you. And they read these off. Peter said, watch out, be careful. Be careful. Why don't you say to the people, I'll tell you what I'll do. You show me some other writings that are not written by Paul, but does away with the law. Then we'll sit down and have a talk. But just take, grab Paul's writings and say that because he wrote that Messiah is the end of the law. And then they say, see, whatever Messiah does, you can do. And he didn't teach keeping the Ten Commandments, so you don't have to either. Well, the whole thing is the word telos in the Greek is a word that means the goal. The uttermost option that you can get is the telos, and that is Yahshua. And that is the law. The law brings you to think like Yahshua, to act like him, do the things he did, to obey Yahweh, and so on. We find that Paul's writings, if you really sit down and look at them, they don't really mean what people think they do. And of course, usually if you have a mindset that you're going to find all those verses and put them in a book and that's the one you're going to study, you're not getting the whole meat of the evangel that we should be having. I want you to turn over to the book of Ephesians, if you will. Ephesians chapter 1. Excuse me. Just want to pick up here again. Paul also said we should keep the evangel. We should obey it. But notice here in chapter 1 of Ephesians, he says in verse 3, blessed be the mighty one and Father of our Master Yahshua Messiah, who has blessed us with all spiritual blessings and heavenly places in Messiah, according as he has chosen us in him. So here Yahshua has done the choosing. He has chosen you. Sometimes we have people that we kind of wonder, why are they coming to us? People that you would probably never choose to join us here today. But we don't have any choice. If someone comes and wants to know about Yahshua, some higher power put it in their mind to come and ask us to see what we need. And they will actually be a part of the body, but we ourselves wouldn't pick them out. In fact, in Corinthians, you know, the first chapter, it talks about Yahweh takes the base things of the world and calls them. And even in the different things that Yahweh does. In the seventh chapter of Deuteronomy, he talks about Israel. He said, you were the smallest of all nations, yet I chose you to be the ones that I'm going to make kings and priests and rule over this world. So here we find again, Yahshua has chosen us in him before the foundation of the world. Does that mean that before there was ever any creation that Yahshua and Yahweh sat down and said, well, I'm going to have all of you in his book? I don't know, but in his wisdom, I don't doubt that they know more about this than we do. And I'm just glad we're all here and able to read his word, learn from it, and become better followers of Yahshua. It says that we should be holy and without blame before him in love. In Ephesians 5, there's another verse that's rather interesting. It goes right along with that same thought. And again, it's to help us to remember that we should always be willing to do what Yahweh wants us to do. Notice here in chapter 5, we move down to verse 23, where it says, for the husband is the head of the wife, even as Messiah is the head of the ecclesia, and he is the Savior of the body. And then we are to be subject to Yahshua. And we find there that in verse 24 it says, the assembly is subject unto Messiah, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. So we as a body, the ecclesia, the called out one, should be doing what Yahshua wants us to do. Let's go to Colossians chapter 1. Here's another one we want to take a look at. Another of Paul's writings. But he doesn't do away with the law on every one of them, and sometimes the implication is we ought to be obedient to Yahweh's word. Notice here in chapter 1 of Colossians, he says in verse 22, in the body of his flesh, through death, to present you holy and unblameable and unreprovable in his sight, if you continue in the faith, grounded and settled, and be not moved away from the hope of the evangel which you have heard and which was preached to every creature which is under heaven, whereof I, Paul, am made a minister. So Paul says that's been preached all over the world. Well, it's been preached in different ways and under different circumstances. But the interesting thing is here that the New Testament corroborates what is already in the Old. I want you to go back to the book of Isaiah, chapter 62. Isaiah, probably is quoted more times than we realize. But in chapter 62, we're getting the background there from 61, but I want to start out with 62 first and note here verse 10 in chapter 62. Notice here, already this ties in with the book of Revelation. Verse 10 says, go through the gates, prepare the way of the people, cast up the highway, gather out the stones, lift up a standard for the people. So here we find it talks about the gates. We just read that in Revelation. There are 12 gates named for the 12 tribes of Israel. Whichever gate you enter has to be through one of the tribes. You don't get into heaven, as they say, by going through some other way. You don't get to the kingdom any other way besides going through the gates. And you have to do it the way Israel had to do it. And that is to follow Israelite law that was given to them, call on the mighty one of Israel to do his will, and to live like an Israelite and spend some time out here in the fall of the year, out in the woods, in a sleeping bag for 7 days and 8 days. That's what Yahweh wants. And the world looks upon us as a kind of an odd people because we're forsaking our homes, coming out here 7 days. What's the last great day, which is today? But remember this. We know you're all busy. You have your life to live, and there are things that you are commanded to do when you're at home, or is demanded of you, I should say. But here we are. We've proven to Yahweh we're willing to take 7, 8 days out of our life, spend it the way He wants us to do it. And I think you'll find that that is one of the things that most of the world doesn't understand. But when you read the scriptures and you understand them, it makes perfect sense. Because it's like Yahshua who came here and tabernacled among us. He was here for a while and then he left. Now he is our high priest. Now he is the one who pleads for us when we make a mistake, when we sin, and he takes our case to the Heavenly Father. He is the high priest, the mediator. And that's what he does. But notice here it says, in verse 11, or verse 10, it says, gather up the stones. Well, another way would say it, make the road smooth. Get rid of the stones. Get them out of the road so they don't impede people in their travels. Verse 11, behold, Yahweh has proclaimed unto the end of the world, say ye to the daughter of Zion, behold, your salvation comes. Behold, his reward is with him and his work before him. So here we find that Yahshua is going to be the one that will bring the reward with him. I don't know how many times I've noticed preachers, Sunday preachers especially, say, so-and-so died and went to his reward. The Bible never says that. The Bible says Yahshua brings his reward with him, as every man has earned. And we just read the parable that tells the same thing, the 25th chapter of Matthew. So here we find that he says, behold, thy salvation comes. His reward is with him and his work before him. So what we have here is Yahshua, that he starts out with his people, but soon his kingdom is going to cover the entire earth. I believe that is what we are to be doing, is to prepare to know exactly what Yahweh wants us to do. You see, we're supposed to know the scriptures. We're supposed to know what to do, how to behave, how to carry out Yahweh's law. It's almost like Yahshua. He was doing the things that Yahweh taught him and that he learned. And he had to learn obedience by the things that he suffered. We too have to learn obedience by the things that we suffer, because we find out that after all, when we really suffer and we realize the reason for it, that we're going to be a better people after we work through it. He doesn't say you will not have to go through the valley of the shadow of death. He doesn't say you don't have to do that. You may not have to do it, but you may. And if he does, he said, I know you're with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. So we do know that Yahweh is working out a program, even though we don't always understand why it is that way, and so on. I want you to back up a little bit. Go to the 62nd chapter. I'm sorry, 60. Where are we in? Yeah, I want to go to 61. I'm sorry. We've already been there, 62. 61. Because this is the sabbatical jubilee year, beginning of it, on the Day of Atonement, chapter 61 ties right in with this, because the scholars say that this is referring to the sabbatical year. And notice that this is the same thing that in the book of Luke that Yahshua read. And you've probably heard this, but I'm going to go through it again. Excuse me. Chapter 61, verse 1. The Spirit of Yahweh Elohim is upon me, because Yahweh has anointed me to preach the good tidings unto the meek. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of prison to them that are bound, to proclaim the acceptable year of Yahweh. And then he stopped. But see, he did come and he proclaimed the good tidings, telling about the coming kingdom. He also bound up the brokenhearted, and let them know that they were on the right track. They were doing the right thing, that he was indeed the Messiah. But he stopped right here on the day of vengeance. He didn't say anything about it. He sat down. And it says all eyes were fastened on him. They looked at him and they were astounded. And he said, this day has that scripture been fulfilled in your ears. Now when we go back to read this, we find that it talks about the day of vengeance. The day of vengeance is still ahead of us. That's ahead of us. But Yahweh, you see, is going to bring tribulation on the world. He's going to bring punishment on the world. You find that in the book of Revelation, chapter 7 and 8. And it talks about the plagues that are going to come. And brethren, by the time those plagues get done, and by the time you come to almost the end of the chapter of, or end of the book of Revelation, out of the 6.5 billion people we have on this earth, there will be about 2 billion left. So it's not going to be an easy time. But you have to get acclimated to that point, that Yahweh's going to protect you. He's not going to allow his people to be the ones that have to go through all these things. He protected Israel, didn't he? They were in the land of Goshen. But they had to go through the first three plagues. But after that, and then on, they were protected. The plagues never went to the land of Goshen. Israel was protected. He can do the same thing today. Luke 21 and verse 36 says that he will protect us. He talks about keeping us in his pavilion. So don't worry about protection. Worry about, am I doing Yahweh's will? Am I doing what I should be doing? And reaching out to others. Because I do believe that the glories that we have in the coming kingdom are going to be a lot greater than we can even imagine. I do believe that we're going to be able to do things that our mind just... Well, like it says in the... There is not, I have not seen nor ear heard, neither hath entered into the heart of man the things that Yahweh has prepared for them that love him. In your wildest expectation, you can't fathom everything that Yahweh has planned for you if you're faithful. your mind collapses trying to figure out what all these things are. Because when I was surprised to read, I think it was Henry Morris's book, who was a creationist as opposed to one of these other guys that believes in Big Boom theory and so on. Anyway, he said that creation is still going on. There's more creation being done in apparently new planets they've never seen before. I wonder why it says in the book of Luke, in chapter 2, and I think it's about verse, chapter 1 in the announcement, it says of Yahshua's kingdom that he would be great, and of his kingdom there'll be no end. His kingdom is going to grow and grow and grow, and it'll be endless. Yahweh himself, as I understand it, has never appeared in the flesh. He's never appeared in matter. He's always been in the spirit realm. He stayed there. He's called the invisible one about four times in the scripture. And he's never been seen by human eyes. But Yahshua has. He told his disciples, if you see me, you've seen the Father. I look just like him. I act like him. I talk like him. I believe like him. In fact, I'm a replica of him. Well, that's what we have to be. A replica of Yahshua and Yahweh. Because I do believe when Satan comes to the end of the age, his wrath is going to be so strong that he is going to try to attack the ones that are going to replace him. If you were Satan, would you care about those people out in the world that are being misled and they're keeping the pagan holy days and doing all these things? Or would you strike at the nerve center of Yahweh's work? Those that are keeping his laws, keeping the Sabbaths, calling upon his name, that's the ones he's after. That includes you and me if we're faithful. But Yahshua said to be faithful. Paul said be faithful. Continue on. So we just don't know where the end's going to be. Well, here we are in chapter 61, reading about the sabbatical jubilee years. He says, the acceptable year of Yahweh, the day of vengeance, in chapter 61, verse 2, and to comfort all that mourn, to appoint unto them that mourn in Zion, to give them beauty for ashes, for the oil of joy for mourning. Now that word mourning tells us there's going to be some terrible times ahead. People would be mourning for their families, for their children, for their parents, whatever it might be, friends and relatives. The garment of praise of the spirit of heaviness. Spirit of heaviness means you're downcast and worried and concerned and you're not joyful and you're worried about the people out there that are not being taken care of. And here you are sitting safe and you're worried about those that are going through all this tribulation. But he says he will give you the garment of praise for doing what you're doing. So stand fast. That they might be called the trees of righteousness. It's rather interesting. It says trees of righteousness, and that refers back to the previous chapter, 21, where it talks about the branch. The branch of my planting. So actually, it's a planting of Yahweh. And it's the trees and things that Yahweh has created. But notice here as we move into verse 4 again. Probably like this verse so much, I got to go over it again. This whole chapter, I mean. Because I think it's talking about us and it's talking about the sabbatical jubilee years. Notice it says that it's our job to build the old waste and raise up the former desolations, repair the waste cities. What do you suppose that's talking about? Hold your thumb there and go over to the book of Acts, chapter 3. Chapter 3, and you'll think you'll find there that we have an allusion to this self-same thing. Here, you find that Yahshua has to remain in the heavens. Chapter 3, and beginning there in verse 19, it says, in Acts 3:19, repent, therefore, and be converted, that your sins may be blotted out, when the times of refreshing shall come from the presence of Yahweh. And he shall send Yahshua Messiah, which before was preached unto you, whom the heavens must receive until the times of restoration of all things. What does he mean, restoration of all things? Well, how many people today know about the Sabbath? How many know about the holy days? How many know about Yahweh's name? Those are the things he's going to restore. The Eliah message is back in the book of Malachi, that before that great and terrible day of Yahweh comes, the Eliah message has to be preached. The mighty one is Yahweh. That's the one we worship. He's in charge of things. Read about his program. It's in the Bible. Find out what he's going to do. Learn what he's going to do. Be prepared. Know that it's not going to be easy. Be a good servant. Notice it says, the heavens must receive until the times of restoration. And that time of restoration has not yet been completed. But he spoke about that by all his prophets ever since the world began. For Moses said unto others, a prophet shall Yahweh your Elohim raise up like unto me of your brethren, and him you shall hear in all things whatsoever he shall say unto you. I do believe that the Eliah message is actually what is being is referred to here, but it's not one person, one man, one person. It's a group of people. When you get over into the book of Revelation, and it talks about the two witnesses, I believe they are not just one or two people. They're actually a group of people. But I want to complete here this one on 61. We'll get over there in a minute. Notice in verse 5, it says, strangers shall stand and feed your flocks, and the sons of the aliens shall be your plowmen and your vine dressers. That means they will be doing the physical work, and you'll be able to help them. Verse 6, he shall be named the priest of Yahweh. Men shall call you ministers of our Elohim. You shall eat the riches of the Gentiles, and the glory, and their glory shall you boast yourselves. For your shame you shall have double. So if you have trouble in following Yahweh, he says it's going to be tough. But he also says, confusion they shall rejoice in their portion. Therefore in their land they shall possess the double. Everlasting joy shall be unto them. It's kind of like reading about Job. He had to go through a lot of problems, but in the end everything he had twice as much as when he first had to sit there and scrape off the scabs off of his body and so on, because he stayed with it. Notice here it says, verse 8, for I, Yahweh, love judgment. I hate robbery for burnt offering, and I will direct their work in truth. I will make an everlasting covenant with them, and in their seed shall be known among the Gentiles, and their offspring among the people. And all that see them shall acknowledge them, that they are the seed which Yahweh has blessed. I will greatly rejoice in Yahweh my soul, and be joyful in my Elohim, for he has clothed me with the garments of salvation. With garments of salvation. That's what we find we're to have on when Yahshua comes. What are they? Well, we find here in this verse that says, he has covered me with the robe of righteousness. We do Yahweh's bidding. We do obey him and do what we can. A bridegroom decketh himself with ornaments and adorns herself. The bride adorns herself with jewels. So we find it's going to be a joyful time for the wedding. But that comes after the strife and all the wars and so on come on. Verse 11, for as the earth brings forth her bud, and as the garden brings things that are sown in the springs forth, so Yahweh Elohim will cause righteousness and praises to spring forth before all nations. So Yahweh has a program. He knows what he's going to do. And it's up to us to be faithful and know that the end is before us. Because Yahweh always tells the end from the beginning. And we can go over there and know exactly what it's going to be. I want you to turn with me to the 7th chapter of the book of Daniel. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel. Chapter 7. And chapter 7 is a verse wide open for discussion, and it's one we could spend a couple of weeks on, I guess. But chapter 7, I don't want to hit everything here. I want you to skip down a little bit here. I mentioned to you before I said that I believe that Yahweh has never left the spirit realm. But he has been seen in vision three different times, if I remember right. Once in the book of Ezekiel, and here, and also in the book of Revelation. note here. See, I want to skip the one here about the beast here, because let's put in here at verse 9. Here we read that Daniel wrote, "I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit." So this is Yahweh himself sitting at the throne. Ezekiel talks about him and so on as well. "Whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like the pure wool. His throne was like a fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. A fiery stream issued up and came forth from him. Thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were opened." I like what Elder Scott says about that. When you read this thing, don't ever try to get in the goat line. Get in the sheep line, right? Get in the sheep line. Don't get in that goat line. Because he's going to have a judgment, and they're lined up before him. Notice here it says, "The books were opened. I beheld because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake. I beheld even till the beast was slain, and the body destroyed and given to the burning flame." So that tells us that this is going to put an end to the evil that is so present with us now. "As concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and time." Verse 13, "I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven, and came to the Ancient of Days, and brought him near before him." So here we have Yahshua and Yahweh seen in vision. This is what Daniel saw. And it says in verse 14, "And there was given him dominion and glory," that's Yahshua, "and a kingdom, that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that shall not be destroyed." So here we find out about Yahshua's kingdom. It's being established. As we move on down, Daniel said, "I was grieved in my spirit, in the midst of my body, and the visions in my head troubled me." So Daniel sees all this, and he's overwhelmed by it all. He can't understand it. He doesn't know what it's all about. He's not sure he's really seeing it in the first place. And he probably feels sick to his stomach. Verse 16, "I came near to one of them and stood by and asked him the truth about all this. So he told me and made me know the interpretation thereof. These great beasts, which are four kings which shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High," you notice how first it tells about these kings arising out of the earth. And then Yahweh says, "But don't worry about it. I'll tell you what's going to happen to those four kings." Verse 18, "The saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever and ever, even forever and ever." So he tells the end from the beginning. And you read this and you kind of get worried. And Yahweh says, "Don't worry, I'll tell you what's going to happen now." And he tells us the end. So you keep reading and you keep gaining more confidence in his word. It says in verse 18, "But the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever and ever. Then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceeding dreadful, whose teeth was of iron, his nails of brass, which devoured and broke in pieces, and stamped the residue with his feet, and the 10 horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, and before whom 3 fell." And you find it says, "Even of that horn that had eyes and a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows." Well, that's talked about in the book of Revelation, about the one who speaks great things. "I beheld," verse 21, "and the same horn made war with the saints." So if somebody tries to tell you we're going to heaven in the rapture and be sitting up there and looking down on earth and see all these people dying and everything going on, that's not the way it is. We're going to be right there. But you're going to find that Yahweh's protective power for you is going to make you a deep believer in what Yahweh is doing. There'll be a few murders, that's for sure. It's going to happen. But also, Yahweh said that you will be rewarded double. We just read that. Not here, but over in the book of Isaiah. Okay, here it says, of the 10 horns that were in his head, and he has a mouth that speaks great things, and you'll find that in Revelation 13:7, it says the same thing, that this beast has a mouth that speaks great things. Verse 21, I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them. So there's going to be martyrdom. And here we find in verse 22, until the Ancient of Days came. Yahweh himself comes to rescue his people. And it says, he came and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. Yahweh always tells us, don't worry, it'll turn out all right. It looks bad, but in the end, Yahweh is going to prevail. Notice here as you move on in verse 23, it says, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon the earth. Well, that hasn't happened yet. We probably, all of us, are wondering if maybe what's going on in the world today is laying the groundwork for what we're reading here. It could well be. I'm not saying it is or isn't. But I do believe that we're almost at the end of the age, or at least beginning, ready to be on the threshold of the tribulation. It's getting to the point where when man starts creating clones of babies and human, I think we're getting into an area that doesn't bode well for the future, because we're dabbling in Yahweh's creative scene, and we shouldn't be doing that. But they call that progress, so here we go. Anyway, this fourth beast is going to be different from all other kingdoms. And you find that in Revelation. It says the same thing. And the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings, and shall speak great words against the Most High. There we have it again, speaking great words against Yahweh. And you'll find, And it says that they shall wear out the saints of the Most High and think to change times and laws. And they will be given into his hand until a time and a times and a dividing of a time. 3.5 years. Notice how he repeats himself here. He says this over again about subduing 3 kings and so on and so forth. But there's always a bright side. Verse 26 says, the judgment shall sit, they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. So here we have the reassurance just in this chapter. And we know that this is a prophecy that's not been entirely fulfilled. In fact, it dovetails with part of that over in the 11th chapter. The 11th chapter of Daniel is a little more complete, but we do have here the one that I wanted to talk about, namely Yahshua and Yahweh. That Yahweh does appear here, and it's rather interesting that Yahshua is the one that is given the kingdom. Yahweh turns it over to him. I'd like to, maybe we should go to this 11th chapter, because I think we can skip part of it. Let's go to the 11th chapter, 21st verse. It's not quite sunset yet, so you don't have anything else to do anyway. Most scholars feel that what has been read here up to the 21st verse has already occurred, and they can go back and point out where it probably did already occur. But they pretty much agree that beginning of the 21st verse, they really don't feel comfortable saying this has already been fulfilled. Sometimes history repeats itself, and sometimes it's a new understanding. But anyway, this tells about the one that's going to come at the end of the age, the man of sin, probably, that we read about in the book of Revelation. Verse 21, it says, in his estate shall stand up a vile person to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries. So the man who takes over is not one that was gladly given it, but he works deceit and he works some problems, and he eventually masters everything and he gets to be the one that's in charge. And it says that in verse 22, the arms of a flood shall they be overflown from before him and shall be broken, also in the prince of the covenant. And we find it says, and after the league made with him, he shall work deceitfully. So it's really describing someone who works his way around things, a politician, and probably a skillful negotiator, whatever it might be. And so, verse 24 says, he enters in peaceably, even upon the fattest places of the province, and he shall do that which his fathers have not done, nor his fathers' fathers. He shall scatter among them the prey and spoil and riches, and he shall forecast his devices against the strongholds, even for a time. We'll get into a kind of a repetition of this in just a little while here. But it's a human being that is really skillful. He's one that works things to his own ends. He defies Yahweh. He's successful for a while. Now notice in verse 25, he'll stir up his power and his courage against the king of the south with a great army, and the king of the south shall be stirred up to battle with the great, very great and mighty army, but he shall not stand, for they shall forecast devices against him. And verse 26, yes, they shall feed the portions of his meat. They that feed the portions of his meat shall destroy him and his army, and shall overflow, and many shall fall down slain. Then he goes on to talk about the king's hearts. Both these kings' hearts shall be to do mischief, and they shall speak lies one to another at one table. But it will not prosper, for yet the end shall be for a time appointed. Oh, and again into this, because when you read for the time appointed, that's talking about Yahweh's holy days. And this is a prophecy talking about the fulfillment of the prophecies. And we'll find that later in the chapter, in the same chapter 36 and also 44. But notice here it says, then shall they return to the land with great riches, and the heart shall be against the holy covenant. They shall do exploits and return to his own land. Or he shall do exploits and return. At the time appointed, he returns. So these are special days that we find the Moed, Yahweh's words, the Moedim. And strangely enough, it falls on Yahweh's times. He shall return and come toward the south, but it shall not be as the former times, or as the latter. For the ships of Chittim shall come against him. Therefore he shall be grieved and return and have indignation against the holy covenant. So shall he do. So he shall even return and give intelligence with them that forsake the holy covenant. The holy covenant, of course, is something that Yahweh has, and this man's working against it. And verse 31 says, arms shall stand on his part, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of his strength, and shall take away the daily sacrifice, and shall place the abomination that makes desolate. Some of the scholars feel that there's going to be a tabernacle in the Middle East. It's going to be over in the area of Jerusalem. And there's going to be a Holy of Holies there. And that is where this abomination, probably the idol or the... actually, it'll be an idol, will sit there. It's just like Antiochus Epiphanes did. and it's called the abomination that makes desolate. And notice that in verse 32, and such as do wickedly against the covenant shall he corrupt by flattery. So this man is actually talking against those that do keep the covenant, that do obey Yahweh's law. He corrupts them by lying to them and telling them they're doing the right thing and they're doing great. But the people that do know their Elohim shall be strong and do exploits. Here is a promise. I don't know exactly if we understand this right, but the people that know Elohim, it says, are going to do something about this. Do exploits. I think the NIV says, shall resist him. But I also find other scholars think that this means that at the end of the age, that Yahweh's people will be given power to do miracles. We'll actually be able to withstand some of these things. We'll see. Let's go on with verse 33. They that understand among the people shall instruct many, yet they shall fall by the sword, by flame, by captivity, and by spoil, many days. Notice, I always have to call this to people's attention. It says they that understand. It's not going to be the preachers. It's not going to be the minister. It's going to be the ordinary people that know Yahweh's truth. They are the ones that understand, that will instruct others. And also we read about people that are hangers-on. They hang on to them, but they don't really follow and believe. But it's like any port in a storm, and as long as they're being protected, they think, well, I'll join with them, and I'll be protected. That's what it says in verse 34. When they fall, they shall be helped with a little help, but many shall cleave to them with flattery. So you're going to have some hangers-on that are not really sincere, but they're with Yahweh's people. Why would they be with Yahweh's people unless Yahweh's people were not being protected and given special consideration by Yahweh? That's why they join up with them. They have that same protection. But they're not sincere. And you'll notice here it says, and the king shall do according to his will. This is the man of sin. He shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every deity. He will actually say he's higher than anyone else. And he shall speak marvelous things against Yahweh, the mighty one of all deities. And he shall prosper until the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined, shall be done. Nevertheless, shall he regard the mighty one of his fathers. Neither shall he regard the mighty one of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any mighty one. For he shall magnify himself above all Elohim. So he magnifies himself above every deity. He says he is Yahweh himself. He is a creator. And he carries on this masquerade for quite a while. It says here that he magnifies himself above all. And then we find here, it says, but in his estate shall he honor the Elohim of forces. What does that really mean? Well, I think if you have a Bible with notes in it, I think the Companion Bible says it's the mighty one of forces is the mighty one of fortresses, armaments, ammunition, munitions. And he probably will use a lot of electronic type warfare weapons, because this is really a whole new way of carrying on a war, which we read here beginning there with verse 35 and 36. And it says that he will honor the mighty one of forces, one that his parents knew nothing about. And of course, our new technology in warfare is airplanes that are flown by ground crews and so on, and all of the satellites and all this other stuff. He says that he will honor those with gold, silver, and precious stones there in verse 38. Shall he do in the most strong holds and with a strange deity, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain. So he's going to divide the land, give it to those that don't have any, and he gain his popularity that way. And then we find the king of the south is going to push at him, going to come at him with chariots and so on. And we find that he'll enter into countries and he'll pass over, continue to have great success. He shall enter also the glorious land, which would be Palestine or Jerusalem, and should say Israel. But these shall escape out of his hand, Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon, which is Jordan. And you read in the book of Isaiah, that 63rd chapter, that when Yahshua comes, he takes care of Moab first, and that's why his garments are stained with blood. He shall stretch forth his hand, verse 42, upon the countries, the land of Egypt shall not escape, and he shall have power over the treasuries. He will be taking in all the money and so on. Talks about Egypt and the Libyans. The tidings out of the east shall, and the north shall trouble him. So he'll go forth with great fury to destroy, and he will try to plant his tabernacle in his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, and he shall come to an end. None shall be there to help him. Well, that chapter 11 is takes a lot of study, and it's really a deep chapter. We don't have time to do any more with that. All I was trying to do, brethren, is point out that we are probably on the brink of something great, whether we like it or not. But we always have to think of what might happen. And I would urge you not to be overly concerned. Occupy till I come, Yahshua said. Don't go dig an air raid center, cellar, and crawl in there, because you don't know what's going to happen. But I do think when you read the promises, he always says he will take care of his own. And he will. But there may be a few martyrs, but if that is what Yahweh wants you to do, go ahead and let that be your lot. I don't think Yahweh has betrayed you, because you know somebody's going to have to be the martyr. And if it falls your lot, well, do it. And praise Yahweh for the opportunity, just like the disciples. They counted it great to suffer shame for Yahshua's name, and they continued doing the work. We could study prophecy by going into some of the other ones. I don't want to do it anymore. But I want to say, brethren, that for me and my wife, it's been a great joy to be here for the Feast of Tabernacles. We're very thankful that you're all here. We thank each one. And I want to make sure that we are also thanking the ladies that have made all the leftovers and the leftovers that are left over, because we're going to enjoy them, aren't we? So we know they're busy back there all the time doing something. And I all appreciate that. I do think that we have the best group of people here today that we've ever had. I think each year they get better and better and better. In fact, you should have seen the face of Delwyn Wilson light up when I said to him that we have a benevolent donor here who has donated some money to buy the trimmer that goes on the collator. He grinned from ear to ear. Those are the kind of things we really are grateful for. And by the way, we also can do some work with the video and also with the Philippine work over there. So we hope we can do that. But that's kind of a nice surprise that we have coming to the feast. And we appreciate that so much. It's always been our habit and our custom when we close the work here is to turn to Numbers chapter 6. I know we'll all be going home, and I want you to think of this, that we don't grow fruit up on the mountain. It's been a mountaintop experience. You know, when Moses was up on the mountain talking to Yahweh 40 days and 40 nights, when he came down from the mountain there in the book of Exodus, that actually... Maybe I should have you turn there first. Maybe you want to know where we're going with this. In the book of Exodus, chapter 30, 34. I'm wrong. It's 34. And beginning with verse 28. We're in Exodus 34, 28. Because I think what has happened to us up here, it's the same thing that Moses went through. Verse 28 says, Moses was there with Yahweh 40 days and 40 nights. He did neither eat bread nor drink water. And he wrote upon the tables the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. I want you to notice that. It says the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. The covenant is built on the Ten Commandments. And expand the Ten Commandments, and we have all the other things that Yahweh wants us to do. But the Ten Commandments are actually what he's really trying to show us, are the building blocks of his covenant. And you'll notice if you read that, the first five are actually to worship Yahweh. The next five are to worship a fellow man. So you have Ten Commandments, five on one hand, five on the other. The fifth commandment is actually one that we obey our earthly father, give him honor, but also it talks about our heavenly father. So I like to think that maybe the fifth commandment is a turning commandment. It goes from the human relationship back to the heavenly and so on. But anyway, verse 29 here in this 34th chapter says, and it came to pass when Moses came down from the Mount Sinai with two tablets of stone of the testimony, that he came down from the mount, that Moses didn't know that his skin of his face shone while he talked with him. And you notice here it says, and when Aaron and all the children of Israel saw Moses, behold, the skin of his face shone, and they were afraid to come near to him. You find this also in 2 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 7, by the way. And Moses called to them, and Aaron and all the rulers of the congregation returned to him, and Moses talked with them. And afterwards, all the children of Israel came nigh, and he gave them in commandment all that Yahweh had spoken with him in Mount Sinai. 2 Corinthians 3:7 talks about Moses having to cover his face with a veil, because he had been with Yahweh 40 days and 40 nights. He had been able to get rid of all the human problems, and talked about the spirit things, and talked about the depth of goodness and purity and so on. And then he came down and he began dealing with the people, and people come to him with human problems, carnal problems. And little by little, the glow left him. After a while, he didn't have to have the veil over his face, because he turned to deal with the people's problems, and had taken away all the glory, all the righteousness that he had. You find that is still the case, though, in the book of Revelation, chapter 1, beginning with verse 10, about Yahshua, that his face shines like the noonday sun in its strength, and so on. But anyway, we're coming down from the mountain, and you're going to find that your face is going to lose its shine and its happy atmosphere and the happy attitude that we have. But that's all right. We are here. I pray to Yahweh that we've all had enough that will carry us through to the next feast that Yahweh has for us, which is actually Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread, usually in March. And we hope that you plan to keep that as well, because Yahweh has us all planned for you. And if you keep the feast days, you'll be rejuvenated. Your batteries will be recharged, and you'll be able to carry on and do Yahweh's work, and do it because you know there are others out there doing the same thing. You're just one of another, and as a mighty army, someday we will actually be ruling the earth because we do these things and keep Yahweh's law, even when we have to get out and come down the mountain where all the dirt is, down in the valley, and do our work there, because that is where the fruit is growing. That is where the blessings are. The fruits of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. All of those are what we should be working for.